Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello there, friends, and welcome to Friday, or Fri-yay, as we like to say around here. Happy Friday to everybody. I hope you have great plans with your family for the weekend. And Friday is Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, where I answer questions that I've been hearing from my listeners, from my patients, from my students, from my own kids. I'm answering those questions. And today I'm going to be answering a lot of questions about substances. What do I mean by that? Alcohol, marijuana, fentanyl, substances that are threatening our kids' security and safety. Should we be scared? How scared should we be? What should we do so that we're not scared? Those are the kinds of questions that I'm going to answer today. But before I get there, let me encourage you. And if you've been listening since January, you know that every week we talk about a new habit that we should be integrating into our family. Maybe it's not new for you. Maybe it's something you already do, but then we can just reinforce it. We can emphasize it, and you can appreciate that you are doing this with your family and know that these things make a difference. Now, if you are not caught up, you can go to the Dr. Nurse Mama Coaching Minutes. You can find those at AFR.net. You can find that on any podcast app, and you can listen to just little 1 minute snippets for each habit. We are on week 45 of 52. I cannot even believe it. I'm sorry. We're on week 46. Oh, I'm even a week behind. We are just speeding toward the end of the year. We are on week 46. And the habit that I want to talk to you about today is serving together as a family. Volunteering somewhere, giving your service, and I know that many of you do that, but I want to encourage you, challenge you even, to serve together as a family. As we're approaching the holidays, there are plenty of opportunities, even more so than are regularly there, but don't forget about need for service when it's not the holidays, because there are a lot of families who live in need and communities who have needs all year round, but it's a great time to get connected. So let me talk to you about why this matters. When families work together to help others, it makes them grow stronger as a family. And studies show that volunteering as a family actually builds resilience. It helps your kids to know that when they meet hard times, that there's somebody there to help them. It builds empathy. They can realize that, you know, the other people have things that are much harder than what they're facing. And it gives them a sense of purpose. I remember very vividly when one of my sons was a lot younger, we adopted a family for Christmas, and their Christmas list was, and these were kids who were my kids' ages, you know, about school age. And what they wanted for Christmas was pillows and blankets and pajamas and things that my kids, to be very honest with you, would not put on their Christmas list because they had different ideas. And so, of course, we got those things, but we got other things too. And we went, and this family was living in the back of a trailer that they had converted into a house. There was no running water. There was no electricity. And of course, we were just heartbroken when we got there, and we stood there in the yard talking to the family. And of course, we connected them to all kinds of services following that. I just want to make sure that's clear. But as my kids were playing with their kids in the yard, just like kids do, just finding things to connect over and play with. And I called my kids when we were done and said, okay, it's time to leave. And my son looked at me and said, are they going to leave now too? Are they going home? He could not even imagine that this was a place they lived. And it was a really important perspective shift to show that whom much is given, much is required. And we really needed to serve at that point of need. And for kids especially, it's an opportunity to see they can make a difference. Kids can do so much. So going to pick out something, especially for someone else, using their hands to work, to volunteer, just to provide some empathy, some company. And here's something that actually might surprise you. Studies show that families who volunteer together report fewer arguments. Okay. Anybody, did that perk your ears up? It also promotes a deeper understanding of each other's values and strengths. And it is such a great chance for your kids to see you as leaders, as helpers, as role models, as servants, which inspires them to follow suit. Now, not only that, but serving together as a family has really significant benefits for mental health. In this world where we're talking about mental health crisis, this is a great way to boost mental health because serving others helps kids build their self-confidence. It reduces anxiety. It decreases the risk of depression. And when kids are connected to something bigger than themselves, they're less likely to feel isolated or stressed or meaningless or purposeless or just wandering, which we know is a common struggle today. They're less likely to feel lonely, and loneliness is an epidemic for sure. And research also shows that kids who volunteer, this is really important, it is a protective factor that helps stop them from risky behaviors. That is really important, like substance abuse that we're going to talk about later today. So when we talk about things like we don't want our kids to make unsafe choices, we think about making sure that we're all over their social media or we're talking to them, but we forget about these protective factors. And those are all built into the healthy habits I've been sharing with you all year long. And it's because we get them focused on positive activities. They're surrounded by supportive influences. They have better mental health, so they don't need to self-medicate as much. That's really important. So there are so many ways that you can volunteer, and these ways that fit your family's unique interests and strengths. But here's just a few ideas you can look in your community. You could participate in a community cleanup, finding a local park, a beach, a trail that you could use a little TLC, and you can go and clean up your someplace in your neighborhood. That's a great way to serve and doesn't cost anything. You can serve in a food bank or a soup kitchen, and many communities have organizations that they need help sorting donations or making or serving meals. Kids can help pack food or sort supplies, and they learn the importance about sharing with others. This one is one of my favorites, and it is visiting seniors. Many elderly people in nursing homes or assisted living centers, they welcome visitors. So if you know someone in a nursing home, don't just go visit them. Visit their friends. Ask who their friends are. Bring cards for them. Bring treats. Spend time and play games with them. Sing to them. Tell them stories. Ask them about their life. That is a great way to do it. And if you don't know anyone who's in a nursing home, call a nursing home and say, my family would really like to come and visit. What would that look like? What could we do? How could we come? Who could we talk to? And they can give you some ideas about volunteers that they need. A simple visit can really bring a smile to someone's face, and your kids can learn so much about hearing others' life stories. Now, if your family loves animals, you could volunteer at a local animal shelter. Kids can help care for animals by feeding or playing with them. It's a great way to teach responsibility and compassion. Or another idea is a project you can do from home, and that is creating care packages so you can make hygiene kits, snacks, other care packages, maybe people who are experiencing homelessness, families in shelters, maybe it's people in the military. Those would all be great things to do. Or here's an even better idea, or an easier idea, great idea. Go to SamaritansPurse.org/OCC and participate in Operation Christmas Child. You've heard me talking about this. One of my favorite things to do, bring the joy of Jesus at Christmas time to children all over the world. So you can either participate if your church is participating, or a local church, you can find one that can help you, or you can just do it on your own. And they give you ideas of just packing gifts in a simple shoebox for a boy or girl who is younger or even older. I always give a shout out for those older kids. Lots of people pick the younger kids because sometimes that can be easier to shop for, Don't forget about the older kids who need the joy of Christmas too. And it's a great way to be able to serve and to do something together. You could make a whole night of it where each one of your family members does a shoebox and packs one and you wrap it up together. There's letters that you can write. You can do a donation online to help cover the shipping cost of that. And then you can follow it. And sometimes you'll even be able to see where in the world that package went. And if you haven't watched videos of that, let me tell you, they get me every time. It's like the military service men and women coming home and meeting their kids. Oh, makes me cry every time. But to see the kids just delight, just shrieking with joy when they open up that gift, knowing that that little bit of effort could change their lives. And you'll be hearing testimonials from people who received gifts from Operation Christmas Child, and the way that it amazes me. Some of the stories, I have goosebumps even already, because some of the stories are miraculous in the way that children will ask for something and God will supernaturally provide that through your obedience. And that's the amazing thing, because God invites us into his work. We get to be a part of that with him. And when we don't, he still does it. We just don't get the blessing of being a part of it. So it's still early in the holiday season. You still have time to think about being intentional and to serve. As much as we're thinking about giving our kids let's give them the gift of service. And when you serve as a family, you're not only giving back, you're creating shared memories and a bond that lasts. These experiences teach values that your kids are going to carry with them for their whole lives. And they're reminders that no matter what, you're a team and you're going to be there for people who need it. It's a powerful visual image to give your kids going into adulthood. So as you plan for these holiday weeks ahead, I challenge you to think about adding a volunteer day to your family schedule. Start small, have fun, watch the positive effects ripple out both in your family and in your community. And remember, kindness is contagious and it is really great. Spread that stuff around like confetti. I love sharing kindness, and we can share the kindness and the goodness of God through our generosity at the holiday season and all year round. Now, for those of us who are entering the holiday season, there's something else that I want to talk about that I told you I would talk about at the top of the show here. And that is a fear that parents are having, and that is fear of substances. We are terrified our kids are going to get a hold of the wrong pill at the wrong time, that they're going to say yes at the wrong time, that they're going to make an impulsive choice and endanger their lives. Now, substance use is one of the most critical issues facing young people today. And I am very, very concerned about the fentanyl crisis and the fentanyl that is coming across our borders. But don't worry. We are not fear-based. We are faith-informed, and I am here to empower you with the tools and knowledge that you need to help keep your kids safe and healthy. And so we'll start with some perspective, because we know that about 1 in 3 teenagers, 1 in 3, will try drugs or alcohol before they reach high school. Social pressures, curiosity, social media influence, all of these things make substances seem appealing. And we have a generation of young people who is lonely, who is anxious, who is depressed, who is afraid, and they are looking for an easy way to self-medicate. And this can seem harmless, but these decisions can have very serious consequences, especially for kids. Their brain is developing well into their mid-20s. Their brains are much more vulnerable to substance impacts than adults are, and it can really affect their growth and development and lead to long-term cognitive and emotional effects, the way that they think and the way that they feel. So how can you as a parent help protect your children from the dangers of substance abuse? Well, when you come back, I'll give you 5 very powerful action steps to get you started, and I'll answer your questions about fentanyl and some of the other substances I'm seeing. We'll be back right after this break. Don't go away. We'll have more hope for you to encourage your family. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show. That's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That is why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that is a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies, and that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or 140 helps to rescue 5 babies. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just call #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's 250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Welcome back, friends. Yes, that is my prayer today. Jesus over everything, over every bit of chaos and confusion, over all of the mental health crises that are going on in our young people. We know that we have a hope that doesn't disappoint. That's Jesus over everything by The Belonging Company. And my prayer is that your kids feel like they belong in this world. They belong in your family, that they have a place of belonging. That is a powerful way to help them not choose to use substances. Many times kids use substances because they're trying to numb some sort of pain they have. It's an ineffective coping mechanism. And those are the questions that I'm answering today on Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday. I've gotten a lot of questions about substance use and seeing tragedy in my own community, in my own practice. Let me tell you, this is a very real thing that I have witnessed personally. And as our kids go into the holiday break, they have more freedom, more time with friends. It's so important for us as parents, as grandparents, as caring adults to have conversation with our kids about this. Now, remember, we're not fear-based, we're faith-informed. And remember that fear-based strategies do not work. So threatening them within an inch of their life, telling them all the scary, horrible things that will happen to them if they do this, that really doesn't work. A lot of us can probably remember the sheriff's office or the police office officers when we were kids showing up at the school with a crunched up car saying, this is what will happen to you if you drink and drive. And those images were terrifying for sure. Traumatizing even, but we know that they didn't really make teenagers drive safer because teenagers are wired to think, yeah, something bad can happen, but it won't happen to me. That is how they're wired to think that they are invincible. So I am going to give you 5 things that you need to do. First is start the conversation early and keep it going. Don't wait until you think your child is old enough to talk about drugs or alcohol. Don't wait until they are teenagers. In today's world, even young children, even school-age children may be exposed to these things through friends or TV or the internet. Start talking about it early. Be open, be honest, be age appropriate. You don't need to tell them every scary detail, but explaining what substances are, what drugs are, why they're dangerous, how they can impact your health, how they can affect your future. And research shows, this is so important, listen to this, kids who feel comfortable talking to their parents are less likely to experiment with drugs or alcohol. And so that doesn't mean just talking to their parents about drugs and alcohol, but just in general. And that's why I keep emphasizing over and over to open those lines of communication. As they grow older, they can know they can always come to you with questions or concerns. The second thing is set clear rules and consequences. Kids need boundaries. They look to you for guidance. You need to set very clear and consistent rules and expectations about drug and alcohol use, that it is your expectation that they will abstain from those things when they are underage, when they are in your house, and explain the reasons behind that. Let them know the consequences if they break those rules. You can say, in our family, we are not using drugs or alcohol because of whatever reason, you know, you want to convey. They're harmful. They're illegal for minors, for one thing, because we have a family history of addiction or whatever it might be. And this helps them understand not just what you expect, but why. Tell them why you make the choices you do, why you're setting the boundary that you have. And that might feel awkward at first, but it gives kids a sense of security, and they need that. They need to know that their safety and their health is a priority for you. All right, that's two. Number three, be a role model. If in anything, if you want your kids to wear their seatbelt, you need to wear yours. If you want them to be kind to others, we need to be kind to others. And our actions always speak louder than our words. Kids do what we do, not what we say. They are always watching. So if you want them to stay away from drugs or alcohol, set a positive example in your own life. So think about if you consume alcohol or if you don't, what are the boundaries around that? But one thing, whether you do or whether you don't, we should never make it seem like a solution to stress or problems. Even communicating something like, it's been a hard day, and then going to alcohol for coping, we need to show them instead that healthy coping mechanisms for dealing with life's ups and downs are not found in substances. It's found in exercise. It's found in talking things out with someone you love and trust, pursuing a hobby and investing your time in that. It's in showing gratitude. It's in praying. It's in taking a walk. Those kinds of things, we need to show them healthy coping mechanisms when they have stress, not just numbing themselves out. Number four, and this is really important, monitor and engage in their social life. Now, that means online and in real life. It is really natural for kids, especially teens, to want independence, to want privacy. But you know what I say to my kids? I say, I pay, I say. If I'm paying for your phone, I have a right to look at your phone. If I'm paying for your life, I have a right to say, to have some say in your life. And that's just the honest truth. But we really need to stay involved in their lives. We need to know their friends. We need to know who they're talking to online. Now, that doesn't mean being the social media police or the social life police, but that means investing in conversations where you know what's going on with them. You know who they're talking to you because they're sharing that with you. We do not have to be helicopter parents or even gatekeeper parents, which the protection strategies are important. We need to be, I've talked about this before on the show, be lighthouse parents. We need to be that steady source of safety and security, knowing where the boundaries are, where the dangers are, where they can find hope, and the shore where we are. That is so important. And studies show that teens with engaged parents, those parents who are involved in their life, who know their thoughts, their fears, their hopes, their dreams, they are less likely to use substances because they know someone is looking out for them. They know you will know, they know you will find out, and they know you're there to help support them. All right, number five, equip them to handle peer pressure. We can't just talk in the abstract and say, don't do it. And we have to equip them with what they do instead. Because one of the biggest reasons that kids try substances is either, there's two reasons actually. One, they don't know what they're doing. They don't understand how dangerous it is. They don't understand, they don't know what vaping is. They don't know that taking a pill from a friend is potentially life-threatening. Or number two, it's because they're pressured by their friends. So teach your kids how to handle situations where they might feel pressured to use drug and alcohol. Literally role play scenarios and practice responses with them. This is such a great tool, and it is awkward, and your kids won't say thank you and oh, I love that, and can we do it again? But it's so important to ask them, what would you say if I pretend to be that friend that's offering them something? And then have them say something that is true to their personality but also is strong on their values. And different kids may respond in different ways. Some kids may say, no, I don't do that. Some kids may say, that's not okay. Some kids may say, I'm not interested and you shouldn't do it either. Let them know it is perfectly okay to stand out. And true friends will respect their choices. And that will give them confidence to say no when they're actually in those situations. And when we approach our kids with a when, not if, scenario, telling them when someone pressures you to try drugs, you say no and you come to me. That doesn't make them feel like if. Sometimes when we think if or we don't talk about it, they think maybe they did something wrong when they get into that scenario. Like, what is wrong with me? I did something wrong that some kid offered me that. If we flip that script and say, this world is broken. You are going to encounter people who try to cope with things and cope with the brokenness of this world with things that are dangerous for you. And they will try to encourage you to join them. And when that happens, you need to come to me. You need to know that it is perfectly okay to say no. We have a higher way. We have a higher power. We have a God who is on your side, and I am here for you. That is so powerful, rather than them thinking, I don't know if I can tell you this. Like, do my parents talk about this? Or am I going to get in trouble that I was there? Should I not have been there? Just normalizing that we live in a broken world, but normalizing our response to live and respond counterculturally is really important. And you need to not underestimate the powerful role that you play as parents, as grandparents, as coaches, as teachers, as any other adult who is in a kid's life, protecting them from the dangers of substance abuse. So we start the conversation early, set clear boundaries and expectations, model responsible behavior ourselves, stay engaged in their lives, and empower them to stand up to peer pressure. It is not easy to be a parent in today's world. So grandparents, those parents and your grandkids, your kids and your grandkids, they need you to be praying for them constantly, to speak words of life to them, to encourage them, to let them know that you are there for them and you are on their side, and that they're doing a good job. Those little words can go a long way. And so those are things to think about. Now, I've been getting a lot of questions about about fentanyl, and I do want to talk about that, but I want to talk about several things. So let me give you some specifics about the drugs they might encounter. We've talked about, yes, they will likely encounter some sort of substance, whether it is a vape, whether it is alcohol, whether it's marijuana, whether it's something prescription that is not being used appropriately, whether it is something more illicit. We have things all along the continuum. And it is so much so that the DEA has an initiative and awareness campaign called One Pill Can Kill. Now, this is a term, I think, as a phrase, I think it's perfectly okay to talk to with your teenagers about, to make sure that they know, because sometimes they can look at one tiny little pill and they can think, that's so small. How is that in any way harmful? I take an allergy pill that is about that size, or even maybe a little bigger than that. But we are seeing increase in counterfeit pills too. Pills that look like they're designed to look exactly like legitimate prescription or over-the-counter medications, like painkillers, anti-anxiety medications, stimulants that kids might take that are prescribed to them. But this is a danger, because we can see, that's why you should tell your kids to never, ever, 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 ever take any medication that is offered to them, even if they think it's something as harmless as a Tylenol, an acetaminophen, an over-the-counter painkiller, or allergy medicine. Never take medication that does not come from your home, that is not prescribed by your primary care provider or used under the guidance of your parents or primary care provider, if it's something over the counter, because these fake pills can contain fentanyl or other very powerful synthetic drugs that are many times stronger than the real thing. And just a small amount, we're talking an amount less than a few grains of salt, can be lethal. Now, these counterfeit pills are sold and traded online through social media, and I've seen this happen very up close and personal, where kids just order, they meet somebody they don't know online, and they think, oh yeah, I'm just going to take that diet pill or that pain pill, just one pill, and they make connections that they think they can trust, and maybe they know it through a friend of a friend. But sadly, many kids and teens and even adults who take these counterfeit pills, they think they're using a safe medication. And what they don't realize is that they are playing Russian roulette and gambling with their lives. That is really, really important. So let me talk to you specifically about fentanyl, because I get a lot of questions about that. People want to know, is fentanyl dangerous? Yes. The answer is yes. It is 50 times more potent than heroin and 100 times more potent than morphine. And fentanyl was responsible for more than 75% of teen overdose deaths. This is a statistic from 2020. And more than 80% of those were unintentional. Kids did not take a pill and thinking that they would end their lives, and that is a tragedy. But in 2020, we saw teen deaths from fentanyl doubled from 500 to 1,000, and that number is continuing to go up. People also ask me, is the cartel targeting young people on social media? In a word, yes, they are. But selling drugs online is not new. Teens can easily connect to dealers, or they can acquire pills through friends and online forum. You may have heard there was a popular psychologist, Dr. Laura, who shared her tragic story of her son dying of an overdose from one of these pills in his own bedroom. And parents want to know, are my kids going to mistake fentanyl pills for candy? Well, that is a little less likely. They still look like pills, and there are very few reported cases of those pills being packaged as candy, but they can look like them. And club drugs have been distributed like that for a lot of years. And I have heard stories of kids who even bring a bunch of pills and put them in a bowl and just take one and see what happens. We're talking about high risk activities here. And listen, I know I've got your blood pressure up. I've got parents who are ready to go search their kids' rooms and go pull them out of school so you can talk to them. Hang on. I'm going to give you hope and encouragement and some help for empowering and protecting your kids. Don't go away. I'll be right back with more.
And my father, your great-grandfather, fought in World War II.
Really?
He was a gunner on the big ship out in the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Your great-grandmother did her part, too.
Was she on a ship?
Oh, no. She stayed back home. She and a lot of her friends worked really hard in a factory because the men had gone off to war.
Ooh.
And they held scrap metal drives to help in the war effort. The folks back home were heroes, too.
Here at the American Family Association, we consider you the heroes back home. As you fulfill your responsibility of caring for your family day to day, your partnership with us is crucial as we fight the enemies of freedom in America. Thank you for your commitment to the American Family Association.
Grandpa, what's a scrap metal drive?
Let's get some cookies, and I'll tell you all about it.
Who told you grace can't reach the messed up ones like you? How's the devil made you believe the lies he tells are true? You're the one who's wandered too far off. It's not too late. Just come home to the cross.
Welcome back, friends. That is The Cross by Ann Wilson featuring Chris Tomlin. And what a great message of hope. Listen, there are so many things in the world that scare us about our kids, threats that they face and dangers that they face and cultural pull that threatens to pull them off track of where we want them to be with a biblical worldview, with a sound sense of self, with a good mental health. But listen, there is hope. And we serve a God who knows, who sees, who cares, and He will help us if we ask. So before we go any further, let me encourage and remind you that the most powerful weapon you have to protect your children in today's world is prayer. Praying for them each and every day. Pray for them as they go out and encounter the things that they are encountering, things that we as parents and grandparents never encounter. Do not underestimate the value of the prayers for your children, for your grandchildren, for this generation that you are invested in. Pray and ask God to protect them, to bless them, to keep them, to make His face shine on them. That is such a valuable thing that we can do. Well, it is Friday and it's Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, and I'm answering questions about drugs and the drugs that are pouring over our border. Do we need to be afraid? Do we need to be concerned? Well, the answer, unfortunately, is yes. But do we need to be equipped and engaged to respond and to protect our kids? Yes, we do. So I was just in the middle of talking to you about fentanyl, what it is and what we need to know about it and how we need to protect our kids. So it is important to know that fentanyl is a synthetic opioid. It's a lab-made opioid that is often used safely and appropriately in medical settings for pain with medical-grade fentanyl. So I don't want people to be afraid. Sometimes they hear all about fentanyl and then you go to have surgery and you think, wait, what are you going to give me? There are some situations where that is given as an appropriate analgesic for surgical procedures or other medical indications. But overdose can happen in street fentanyl because it is potency of it is very unpredictable, and unmeasured doses can very easily cause overdose and death, and it's often laced into other illicit drugs, so it can be put in what in marijuana that maybe teenagers think, oh, that's not harmful, which marijuana is harmful for teens, by the way. It is very harmful. And it's not, the other thing that's really dangerous about fentanyl is that it's not easy to treat with naloxone or Narcan, which is a medication that a lot of first responders carry around that blocks those opiate receptors. It's kind of like an antidote for it. Well, fentanyl doesn't respond to it very well. A lot of people ask too, can it be absorbed through the skin? They're really afraid about that. And that is not as likely to result in a fatality. Now, fentanyl can be swallowed, snorted, injected. Those are very, very dangerous ways to interact with fentanyl, but it is difficult to absorb through the skin without moisture. And so that's why pharmaceutical companies invested a lot and a lot of money and years of research to develop a medical grade patch that does that, because it can be difficult to go through the skin. But, you know, why is everyone so worried about it right now? Well, we do have a crisis of drugs coming into our country, and we do see that school districts are reporting overdoses. We see the number of deaths that are increasing, and we see the DEA issuing an advisory to raise awareness, saying this is something you need to know about. So in all of that, that again scares us, what should parents do? Well, the thing we should not do, the things we shouldn't do, are panic, lecture, threaten, freak out. We need to concentrate on calmly and confidently coaching our kids to navigate these potential pitfalls. We can say something like, hey, I've learned some new things about substances, particularly about fentanyl, and I'd like to share what I learned, and I want to know what you know. And then tell them things like this, messages like this. I want to be sure that you know you can come to me at any time with any concerns, and no matter how uncomfortable or scary, I promise we will get through it together. You can always ask me anything. And if you are not saying that to the point that your kids are rolling their eyes at you and saying, I know, I know, I know, then you're not saying it enough. You need to keep saying it. Don't base it on their response. Tell them every night before you go to bed. Tell them every day before you drop them off for school. You can always come to me with anything. I want you to know that. I love you. I'm here for you. And you can tell them, remember, taking any medication that is not prescribed for you, that is not given to you by me or by me through your primary care provider, is incredibly dangerous and could be fatal. Don't take anything from anyone ever. If you ever find yourself, if you need something for pain, something for allergies, something for anything, I will come and bring it to you or take it from the nurse at school. Don't ever take anything from a friend. And you need to tell them it's absolutely essential that you have a plan in place to get yourself out of a situation where you feel unsafe. You need to feel comfortable calling me. You need to feel comfortable calling 911 if you need to, because I have seen cases where kids have encountered other kids who have overdosed and they don't know what to do. And they think they look sick or they look like something's not right, but they're not sure what to do. Empower your kids to call 911 if they ever see a kid who is impaired and they don't know what to do. Call 911 and then call a trusted adult to get help. But many times somebody's life could be on the line. So don't be afraid to call 911. Another great thing to do is for kids to have a code word where they can text you, they can call you, and it just means, hey, I need you to come get me right now. And you can ask questions when you get here, but just come and get me. Because sometimes kids may find themselves in a situation. Good kids make poor choices. They may be at a friend's house that you trust, that you think nothing has ever happened before. And then all of a sudden, there's this substance introduced. I have talked to so many kids that has happened. Empower them to get out of that situation, to say no, and to call you and to get away from that. Some questions that you can ask your kids is you can ask them, what's your experience like in seeing your peers talk about or access drugs? What kind of conversation is going on in your peer group? You might be surprised to know what they're telling you and saying, what can you teach me about it? What do you know that I don't know? I want to learn from you, because they do know things that you don't know. And that can be a great way to talk about it. And then ask them, what do you need from me to feel safe and comfortable coming to me with any concerns about things that happen? What keeps you from coming to me? How can I help overcome those barriers? Is it fear of what I'm going to say? Fear of how I'll respond? Do you think I'll be angry? Let's talk about what that conversation will look like. And what fears or worries do you have that we could find answers for together? Those kinds of things are important. We've talked about fentanyl, but I also do want to talk with you and answer some questions about chroming. This is another form of substance abuse that I have been seeing on the rise because kids think it is safe. And so what is it? It's inhalation of hydrocarbon-based chemicals that enter your bloodstream and organs, and it creates a high through euphoria and hallucinations. Wait, okay, what? What did I just say, right? Let's try it again. We are talking about inhaling in some way paint cans, solvents, permanent markers, spray deodorant, nail polish remover, hairspray, whipped cream, lighter fluid, cleaning supplies, gasoline, glue. We are talking about common household items that kids are very into what they call harm reduction. I'm seeing a lot of this on social media, and in their infinite wisdom that they have, because you know they don't see those long-term impacts. They haven't had life experience. They're still at that brain development where they think nothing's going to happen to them. They think this is a safer way to, hey, feel really good physically, but not, you know, do something as crazy as fentanyl. These are all very cheap, accessible items that seem harmless. And teens can view this as a safe way to get high when compared to abuse of prescription or street drugs. And it's also an easy way to rebel to get attention. And some kids will do that. You can see this all over social media, thanks to the wisdom that is on TikTok. I hope you catch my sarcasm there, but there is a trend called whip talk that it goes viral from time to time. But when I looked at it, I saw over 600 million views to look on chroming or huffing. You might have heard it referred to. But chroming can cause your heart to stop. It can cause you to stop breathing. It can cause you to choke. It can cause burns from being flammable, and it can even cause death. If you use it over a long term, we're talking cancer, kidney damage, learning disabilities, mental health disorders, and even lower IQs. So there are four main ways that kids do this. One is sniffing, just sniffing something straight from a container. Huffing, where they spray it onto a fabric and then sniff that fabric. Bagging, spraying something into a bag and then sniffing in the bag, or spraying, just inhaling it directly into your mouth. Now, actually inhaling it from a fabric or bag, that makes it more concentrated and more dangerous. And so I'm telling you these things so that you know what to look for, because what should families do? Talk about it before it happens. Talk about it before it happens. 22% of deaths from inhaling these kinds of substances were from kids who did it one time. First time, only time, and it caused death. So if you see something, say something. Look for signs of appearing high. Teach your kids to look for this in their friends, because you think maybe my kid wouldn't do it, but other kids might do it. If their speech is slurred, if they have hyperactive, if they're just acting different, that's important to talk about, to talk through scenarios. What would you do if you found out a friend was chroming or sniffing or huffing, or if they're pressured to engage? And I want to emphasize again here that teen brain development is particularly vulnerable to using substances. The earlier the intervention, the less chance of withdrawal, accidental overdose, or addiction. So talk about the opportunity. A great way to start conversation is when you're shopping in just a pharmacy or a craft store and you see the paint that's locked up. Say, do you know why they locked this up? Let's talk about that. What do you know about it? What would you do if someone pressures you? That's really important. And so we need, again, just to be honest with our kids and educate them about the risks of substances and encourage open communication. Now, I've written about this in my book, Behind Closed Doors, A Guide to Help Parents and Teens Navigate Through Life's Toughest Issues. And this is something that is very close to home, because I have in my family, there is a strong family pattern and a genetic predisposition to addiction, something that I discovered actually when I was in nurse practitioner school, around the time they were mapping the human genome. And we were looking at social issues and mental health issues, much like we looked at risk of heart attack or stroke or cancer. And I saw that addiction as a strangling vine winding itself through my family. So I've written more about alcohol, about marijuana, about other drugs. If you want more information about how to talk to your teenagers about that, you can look at that. But you know, these things that we face are like a giant, and there is no more famous giant story than David and Goliath. And we think about how Goliath taunted the Israelites for 40 days and 40 nights. And David came up in the face of this giant, a young shepherd, not even old enough to fight, mocked by the enemy, doubted by his people, questioned by his own brother, but he was sent by God to fight that battle, just like God has sent you as parents and grandparents to fight the battle for your kids, to fight for their hearts. We fight against culture, but we forget about what we're fighting for, and we're fighting for the hearts of our kids. And so I want to share with you a scripture from 1 Samuel 17, 45 and 46. You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands. That is the kind of confidence that we need as parents and grandparents and people who care about this generation of youth. You come before me with sword and shield, but I come to you in the name of the Lord. Well, listen, friends, in all of this craziness, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May he turn his face towards you and give you peace. And I'll see you right here next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.